Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Redwood City, California. Welcome to the show, Todd Sulzinger.
Victor, thank you very much for having me. It's great to be back on your show.
Well, great to have you here. Now, Todd, you've been at this game a little while, initially investing in the mobile home space and a bunch of different things. It's been a little bit of a journey, but before we dive into the details, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point.
Sure. Well, like you said, I'm based here in Redwood City, which is just south of San Francisco. I was born and raised in San Jose and grew up in Silicon Valley. Went to San Jose State University and started working straight out of college for a variety of technology companies, and had a great career, worked for a lot of great companies with a lot of great people and got to travel the world. But I found real estate probably in the early 2010s, and over time decided I wanted to build a business around that. And through our mutual friends, Robert Helms and Russell Gray, I started to go to some of their syndication training events and was amazed to find that there was this business where I could combine my passion for real estate with my skills in finance and build a career in business around finding opportunities and offering passive real estate investments to people that I, you know, friends and family, colleagues I was working with that had an interest in real estate, but didn't know how to get involved with it.
The last couple of years have been a bit of a roller coaster for anyone in this space. Everything from too much money available at too low an interest rate at one end of the spectrum to almost the opposite problem today. How has that influenced your investment strategy? How has it influenced who you partner with? Take us through that.
Yes, it's been a crazy few years recently. When you think about it, was relatively easy to make money in real estate the last few years with interest rates being so low. I think what's happening is interest rates increase, as we've seen now. It's separating the good, capable operators for ones that may have done well only because the market was in their favor. So when I started out in the business buying mobile home parks, I was doing smaller deals as a sole GP. And those initial deals, I typically got seller financing. So that definitely had some benefits where I didn't have to, go through an appraisal and deal with banks and have that whole approval process, and was able to be more flexible in terms I was able to negotiate. And at that time, I was negotiating rates between the high fives, low sixes, which at the time seemed high. I know some people I talked to would say, "Oh, wow, seller financing, that's great, but I'm getting, rates in the threes and fours." And then now, a couple of years later, those same loans are in that 5-6 range with, interest only and no prepayment penalties and things like that. And they don't look as bad anymore. But I think what I found during that process of running some projects myself is I think it suited my skill set and what I could offer to my investors better would be to start creating my own funds and partnering with bigger operators who have better reach, bigger teams, whether it be property management, underwriting, asset management. So I've made a focus over the last year or so to find different partners to work with to create my own funds and vet operators and then bring those to my investors.
I love it. So today, a lot of investors are sitting on their hands, wishing, hoping that there might be better pricing in our future, expecting a bit of a downturn. Are you seeing reluctance by investors to invest right now? What's your perspective?
I am from some of my investors. Yes, some of my investors are direct investors in multifamily assets. So they're also looking at saying, "Hey, I'm not going to buy anything this year. I'm going to wait to see how things shake out at the end of 2023, beginning of 2024. And then just over the last couple months with the banking crisis, that has also paralyzed a few people from making any moves. So those conversations maybe take a little bit longer to talk to investors about still some of the benefits you can have on a long-term basis buying real estate. And then still, as part of finding good operators to work with, is that some of those operators will have access to some of the deals that are already distressed. So versus, yes, there will be some distress over the next, you know, 9 to 18 months. There currently is distress in the marketplace. And for the big enough operators who have the right connections in the industry and can close on deals, they can find some distress in the marketplace now, which still presents good opportunities.
You mentioned the banking crisis. From someone who lives in Silicon Valley, I'd love to get your perspective from a local perspective. I mean, I, having spent time there myself, recognize Silicon Valley Bank as providing a unique service. There is, tech companies are not going to go to Bank of America now for that same service. It's not a chance. So there's a real void been left in the market. Yeah, some folks can pick up the assets at auction, but that's not quite the same. What is going to fill that void, if anything?
Well, yeah, it was interesting. People were freaking out here for a few weeks. In when I was in the corporate world, we used Silicon Valley Bank at several companies I worked for, and they provided a great function for startup companies, just from an easy way to kind of get into a banking relationship. But then also the treasury services that they offered were really outstanding from a service standpoint. I was talking to another friend of mine who works for a biotech company close to San Francisco, and they had to move a bunch of their money out to US Bank, recreate a bunch of different processes in their system. And through that process, he found that an example like US Bank just did not have some of the capabilities that Silicon Valley had built in and had customized for startup companies who were, the way they transacted was different than other big companies. So they've moved their money back into their kind of their old Silicon Valley Bank accounts and are hoping they can kind of continue to function in that ecosystem. So they really did provide a critical function. A lot of people here bank with First Republic Bank, including myself. And it's been really a shame because they're actually the favorite bank I've personally ever worked with. So it was hard to see, you know, going in and talking to the branch manager, just seeing him on phone call after phone call, trying to talk the depositors off the fence in terms of explain to them what kind of insurance they had, if they had more than $250,000, how could they structure it? So it caused a lot of grief and consternation in the Valley for sure.
Well, I mean, it really is the tip of the iceberg. And I think Peter Schiff is very famous for saying that when a balloon pops, it's usually the pin that gets the blame, but it's not the pin's fault. And this, I think, would be a very clear example of that, that it could have been Silicon Valley Bank, but fast forward a couple of weeks, it could have been Credit Suisse first. The order could have been reversed. And we just don't know. Just seems to be the pin gets the blame.
Yep, couldn't agree more. It was just they were the ones that hit first that made everybody pay attention to the way they had their investment structured, which we've now found out a lot of banks were in the same boat because they had no other place really to invest over the last several years. And with the Fed signaling that rates were going to stay low, I think they took some greater risks than they needed to. On the other hand, they were basing their decisions on what they thought the projections were looking like.
Absolutely. Early on in your career, you invested a lot in the mobile home space. That's an area that continues to be active for a lot of players. Is it something that you are continuing to focus on? Has it lost its luster? What's your perspective?
Well, I still really like the mobile home park space. The first two syndications I put together, we went full cycle on, so we've sold those parks. I still have one in Arkansas. I'm still very bullish on that industry just because there's still a huge need for affordable housing across the country, and there's no more mobile home parks being built, or very few. And oftentimes they're being rebuilt and redeveloped. So I still think there's a huge market for that. I probably will not do any direct purchases myself. Just as I put the several projects that I worked on together, I decided through that process, I did not want to become a giant mobile home park operator. But if there was somebody good to partner with to create a fund to help them build their business, I would definitely consider working with them because I still own one park in Arkansas. I'm a passive investor in some mobile home park funds. So I still really like that asset class.
I love it. Well, Todd, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
They can always reach out to my company. It's Blue Elm Investments, blue like the color, elm like the elm tree, investments.com. And they can reach me at Todd, T-O-D-D, at blueelminvestments.com.
Fabulous. Well, Todd, always great to catch up. And for the listeners at home, reach out to Todd at blueelminvestments.com. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.